Thanks. I'd like to thank all of those that ran. At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, and her topic is... Sorry about that. Don't judge me, love me. And, oh, wait a minute. From the South Potomac area, this is Clarissa, and hers topic is, does my outside match my insides?
A family. Does my outside match my inside, or does my inside match my outside?
I have a way.
Okay. Okay. Because if my inside match my outside, I'd be standing before you a bowl of Jell-O. That's how I feel right now. Again, I'm Clarissa, and I'm an addict. You know, I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. It's a privilege. It's a fright. But I know I got to do what I got to do. You know, when I got the call and I laughed about the topic, of course I called my sponsor. And I was like, what I do with this? She said, have fun with it. I said, because it's you. You can work that into every step. And it's amazing because when I walked in here, I see the first man in Narcotics Anonymous that I learned to have a platonic relationship with, and he saved my life. Thank you. Again and again and again. You know, I didn't want to come to this convention because my insides wasn't matching my outsides. I didn't want to come. See, I'm a self-reliant individual. You know, I know God got me. I know God can fix things. But I still think he need my help. Every now and then, I know if I put my head with God's head, we'll come up with what's best for me. But God let me go through what I had to go through. And I went through the denial of saying, I'm not coming to this meet. I'm not coming to the convention. You know, I'll be there next year. And the reasons I didn't want to come, dang, you'd have missed all the good punchlines. Can y'all hear me now? Or is that for that? Y'all, oh, okay.
We need to start
off. That ain't happening. Not happening. The bowl of Jell-O just turned into juice. No. The reasons that I didn't want to come, and to be totally honest, because me and my self-reliant self, me and my codependent self, see, I take care of other people. And my sponsor, who took me from out of people pleasing, but I have this needy family, and I have a need for them to need me. So I've always had the money to do what they needed to do. Well, over the last year, it's not been like that. Bank account ain't like that. Credit cards, what are they? And I ain't want to tell nobody. I still want to look good. I still want to walk with my head up. I still want to walk around and give you suggestions and help you through your problems. And I'm fucked up on the inside. And I'm sorry because I told my sponsor I would not cuss. But you know what? I know they are feeling words because I taught them. But when you got a chaos of confusion and emotions going on at the same time, fucked up fits. And that's where I was. And one day my sponsee said to me, if you needed it, would you tell me? And I took a deep breath because she was on the phone. She couldn't see me. And I said, yeah. Got no gas in the car to make it the next payday. I ain't got no money to eat lunch. I work in Georgetown, the highest place there is in D.C. Even the cafeteria where I work is higher than the restaurants out there. I didn't tell nobody that I started taking my lunch. I didn't tell nobody that I couldn't go nowhere but to A and to B. Work, home, work, home. When my brother would say, let me use your car to run down, I ain't got no gas for that. He said, Clarice is down here. The car coasts down the hill. But you got to push on the gas to get back up the hill. You ain't getting my car. I didn't want to tell people. It was almost like a mask. And even my family members, you know, we had planned this trip to take the youngest grandniece, great niece to Disney World this summer. Made reservations, got good deals and everything. And I hated to break that promise to that little girl. But God started revealing things to me. And my sponsors, I used to tell them when they start, what do you think about this? And what if this happened? And can you believe? And I used to tell them, stop picking up pebbles. Yes. Next, they're going to be rocks. And now you're getting bricks throwing them at people. And that's what was happening in my life. See, because I didn't tell anybody when the money was getting low. I didn't tell anybody when the money wasn't there. I kept acting as if. And my insides, more than anything, I was afraid to tell anybody. I was afraid to let the person that you had, I thought that you saw me as. See, because maybe it's me that thinks like this, and that's why I think you think like this. See, because everybody don't like it. I like you, and you my friend, and we hang out and everything. When you got a job, when you got some money, but you ain't got a job, I shy away from you. I can't keep carrying you. But that's what I'm used to doing. I want to carry you. I really want you to need me. But I isolated from people because I didn't need you to need me because I had nothing to give you. So I didn't want to be bothered with you because I had nothing to give you. I had surgery on my leg last year. And I come to the convention and I'm limping up the steps and my girlfriend walking behind me so I don't fall. You know, I'm trying not to walk with a cane. Total vanity. Total vanity. I ain't old enough to be walking with no cane. I was in pain all the time and people were saying, this would, you need to walk. You need to exercise. You need to get on a treadmill. What part of I'm in pain don't you understand? I don't want to be fat, but I don't want to be in no more pain either. So I did little as possible. I come home from work, lay in the bed. All weekend long, I lay in the bed. No money and in pain. What do? Get on the computer, play spades all day long. My laptop, my family called my laptop my husband because it's in the bed with me. My laptop, and to tell you how bad the isolation was, I wouldn't even play with people on the computer. I'd play with the computers because then they ain't got to type nothing in the text and talk back. Again, my insides. And sponsees would call. And I helped them through what they were going through, or we just chat through the day. Friends would call. Some people would call and say, I ain't heard from you. Even people I see today, I haven't seen you in a long time. Because I've practically been isolating for almost a year. Mm-hmm. I remember when I had, like, when I got on my sixth step, I was doing H&I work. And then I trained another girl to do H&I work. Because, you know, we can't stay in these positions forever. We got to move on. And she brought in another girl to be trained to work with her so they could alternate. So she had a question, and the first girl I trained, I hope she in here, her initials K, but she told the girl, she said, ask Clarissa. And she said, no, I ain't asking her. She looked too mean. She too evil. And I heard K say to her, she not like that. Don't pay, that's just how she is. Don't pay that no mind. I heard this. And when I did the sixth step and the seventh step, I remembered that. And that's not how I want people to perceive me. I'm not me. I mug all day long. I am not a recovering addict with 22 years clean that go around with a smile on my face every time, all day long, except when I'm asleep. I'm not that person. I'm not that person. And I'm not going to pretend to be something that you think I should be. It took me a long time. A long time, a lot of step works, and a lot of times with my sponsor laughing at me for me to become the person that I love today. Defects are only arrested. They ain't gone nowhere. They ain't gone nowhere. So when I slip into that self-reliant mode, you know, when I slip into that people-pleasing and caretaking codependency mode, I know the defects are, because see, all I got to do is let one in. All I got to do is let one in. And the rest will soon follow. It's kind of like crack. One is too many. Anyway, my leg was hurting, and I finally got so sick and tired of it. I went to my primary doctor. Now, I told y'all to let the defects in. And I told him, I said, they had given me a temporary handicap sticker. Two of them. This is over the course of 2 years, y'all. I mean, 1 year. So I went back, I went to him, and I was like, look, we need to stop playing. You need to give me a permanent sticker. And he was like, how much of, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much are you in pain? 9 3/4. He said, out of 7 days, how many days? All of them. Do you have a cane? Yes. Do you use it? No. Why? Vanity. And I'm not going to do that. He said, Clarissa, you're only making your knee worse. I've had the same doctor since I've been clean. I was like, come on, you know, I need a sticker. Well, part of the reason why I ain't got no money, I heard Cynthia talking about it earlier, because I got all these tickets from speeding and the camera keep catching me. It has gotten so bad that when my little 9-year-old niece is in the car with me, she say, smile! And I do. So tag time came around. I had to get new tags. I drive to work every day. I park on the street every day. I park in front of my building every day. Everybody that know me know my car. All I need is for somebody to come and say, Clarice, you got a boot on your car. That ain't happening. I went to the orthopedic doctor. He looked at my knee. He said, girl, you got a bunch of water on your knee. So they drained the water off my knee, shot my knee with cortisone, shot me with some other kind of narcotic pain medicine. And I went to work. And I was like, this is not going to work. And I went to my boss, and he was like, what's wrong? I said, I think I need to go in the office and lay down or whatever. He said, what's wrong? I said, I'm high as shit. That's what's wrong. Yes, my boss. He said, go home. Don't go in the office. Go home. And I went home and went to sleep. When I woke up the next morning, look, y'all, no cane or nothing. Walking. But the defects that have released the attic in me. When got them handicap tags anyway? Yes, I did. Because they can't put no boot on my car because they ain't the tag number that they got. I know it was wrong. I know it's still wrong. So what I do, I just don't park a handicap spot. Even though I got handicap tags, I won't park in a handicap spot. Today what I have done is I took walking for granted. I don't care where I park now. I can walk without pain. Without a cane. Because what I was so afraid of, and I didn't know at the time, and it was revealed to me, You were afraid that you was going to be like that the rest of your life. Because I would go into a depression when I see an older person walking. Don't be running. Oh, my God. It hurt. And I would sink and sink deeper into this isolation. But that you called me. Hi, how you doing? What's going on? Oh, look, did you read step six? You know, like nothing's wrong with me. My insides was not matching my outsides. I can help you and couldn't help myself. And my sponsor told me long time ago, if you drunk, you can't help me. And drunk doesn't, it's so many different things, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. If something's wrong with me, I can't give all that God has given me to give. I'm holding back. So today, this weekend, even though I had no money, and the sponsee sister, they did what Narcotics Anonymous, my sponsor, and myself have allowed to let in their life. They say, you've taught us. You've taught us how to be a friend. Let us show you what you've taught us. Sponsee sister, got a room paid for it. Fill the car up so we could get down here. Go to eat, they pay for it. You want a book, you want a shirt. It's not like I haven't asked for anything. They ask, because they know my self-reliance won't allow me to ask. See, because I heard earlier today, pride ain't got nowhere. It don't belong in these rooms. It don't belong in these rooms. It's a shortcoming that you can't do nothing but come up short. See, so I allow people to reach out to me. So I got to be, insides be gone.
Yeah.
And I have to reach out. I have to allow people to help me. It doesn't matter how much clean time you got.
That's right.
Because today we all tied for first place.
That's right.
We all just got today.
Yeah.
So I can't be going well. I got more clean time than you. I shouldn't be letting you do this for me. Crap.
Right.
I got more clean time than you because I came in before you did. I maintain my clean time because you came into my life. That's how I keep my clean time. They say we can't keep it. We got to give it away. If you're sitting in here and ain't trying to do no sponsorship work, you hurting yourself. We still going to love you, but you hurting yourself. You cheating yourself. I give what I got. My sponsor gave it to me, and she gave it freely. Even when I left my sponsor, I left her thinking this I could do better. Didn't take long for me to run the heck back to her either. Whoa, didn't it? But anyway, I left my sponsor and would still call her. I was afraid to call her at first because I left her. And this guy asked me, say, when last time you talked to my sponsor, he called her name. I said, she don't sponsor me no more. And I went to walk away. And he said, ho, let me ask you a question. Did she ever become your friend? I said, yes. He said, well, call your friend. Don't call your old sponsor. Call your friend. Yes. You got to allow people to be a part of your life. You have to allow people to give back what you've given to them. See, because if you walk around with your insides thinking you all that. I don't care how much your outfit costs. You heard about dressed up garbage can when you got here. If you ain't caught up with what it means yet, meet me outside. I'm explaining it to you, you know. See, because it wasn't about me getting dressed up to come in here and do a meeting. It was about the pain I was feeling on the inside. It was about the joy on the outside that I allowed people to help me. It's about telling on myself. It's about telling on my disease. It's about exposing. You're right. It's about exposing. Because I come to find out it was all about fear. Every single thing on the inside that I was going through was because I was afraid. Afraid of what you think of me. Afraid of losing your friendship. Afraid that I wasn't going to walk no more. Afraid that people going to stop calling me because I can't do nothing for them no more. Fear on the inside. And to look at me, do I look like I'd be scared of anything?
No.
Shut up, Noel. And I remember more than anything else, and I've told it to two people today, people watching you.
Yes.
It's not about you having a lot of clean time that they're watching you. You don't know who's the newcomer. Because we walk around here with these numbers, but you don't know who the newcomers, because I don't care what your work job is, you're not that great a mathematician to tell me these numbers tell you how much years I got. See, can't do it. Anywho, it's about what's on the inside and keeping it exposed. I can't walk around with my gut open, so I have to relay from my mouth that I need you, that I need you to need me and be okay with it. I need to tell Clarissa that it's okay to be needed and not be able to help in the need that they need at that time. See, you may need money, and all I got to give you is a hug.
Right.
That should be good enough. Just for today. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Again, let's thank Clarice for sharing her experience, strength, and hope. Does your inside match your outside? Still not on. I would like to at this time introduce our second speaker, who is a very good friend of mine, and she's my sister for real, and we come from the same area, east of the river. And this is Sharon, and she's going to do the topic of Don't Judge Me, Love Me.
Hi, my name is Sharon, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Sharon.
But I'm also an artist. I sail. I'm a guitarist. I travel all over the world just for fun. I'm a doctor. I'm a wonderful mother now that God put my children back in my life, because I serve a God of restoration. And I don't want y'all to judge me. I want you to love me. And the reason why I talked about those other things that I am is because you could be that too. See, I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous to just be a recovering addict. See, that was one part of it. But the other part of it was to live my dreams. I think one of our conventions, that was one of our T-shirts. You know, dreams awakening. You know, and sometimes, you know, I remember even myself early on that I thought, if I just don't use, I can become a rocket scientist. If I just don't use, I can become a lawyer. If I just don't use, you fill in the blank, because I'm sure you might have made that statement yourself. But it's not about just not using, folks. And I know that that has caused a lot of people to hate me, because my dreams are totally awake. You know, I grew up in a home where my mother and my father, my stepfather, I never knew my biological father, but my stepfather and my mother, they never touched me. You know, I was born, and then I was put in the crib. I was the baby with the beer in the bottle. Y'all know, don't act brand new. Y'all know what I'm talking about. And I found out after I did my fourth step that babies that's not rocks grow up and smoke rocks. So it became clear to me when somebody introduced me to this blessed program, a Narcotics Anonymous, and I read the first step. And it said that we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable, that a funeral had been postponed. And it was mine. See, I realized that when I admitted that I was powerless over my addiction, that my addiction could not kill me. So a funeral was postponed. And then y'all said, behind that first step is a second step. And in that second step, I realized that I could use the power long before I understood it. The second step told me it wasn't what I used, but why. And once I got to that point, that level of consciousness, my life started to take off in a whole nother different direction. I had about 7 years at that time. I was one of them addicts who didn't believe that your steps could come to life in your living room until I started dating two guys at the same time. My damn eighth step showed up and kicked my damn dough in. And that's when I knew I was serving a living program. See, what I found out is that you cannot start praying to God so much you're working on something, because that revelation would be revealed in your life. See, your sixth step would break your motherfucking windows out your car. But I didn't know that. See, y'all didn't tell me that I was living in a living program. But this is one of the things that you live. Even in Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous and Staying Clean on the Outside, all of those IPs talk about the third step before you even get to the third step. Because it's constantly reiterating action into action. You got to do something. You got to act a particular way in order to come to a level of consciousness so that you can do something. See, I didn't know that at first. See, I'm one of these addicts where things have to, I have to have some kind of symbolism to I'm very ritualistic. So I always got to have something that I can visit, something tangible, something that I can see. And then I found myself with 8 years clean standing in front of a judge, and the judge said very gracefully, y'all, some of y'all might know Cushion Berry. He said, is there anything you want to say before we hand down sentencing? And then it became real to me that I needed to go back and do another fourth step. Because, see, it was in my fourth step that I understood how I use sex to manipulate people. It was in my fourth step that I realized about that abuse stuff. See, one thing about these steps, you got to do them. Real simple, you can't hire somebody to lose weight for you. You can't. I remember going to a gym, paid my membership fee, and I didn't lose 1 pound. I had to go and get on the treadmill, and that's my gift to you all today. Don't judge me, love me. And you know why you should love me? Because I'm going to tell you, I am the living example of somebody who's gone through something. And for those who need evidence, I can show you my cut marks. I can show you my track marks. I can show you my burn marks when I used to put cigarettes out on myself. But I needed all of that for me to get to the 12th step, because the 12th step puts you in a position, not a job. See, some people get it twisted. They think, if I don't use and I get this job, I get the woman or the man, I get the house and the car. But what I'm talking about in that 12th step, this is something God put you into. See, when you're in a position as a servant in that 12th step, that's something you don't apply for. It comes with scratch marks, cut marks, burn marks. It comes with all kind of stuff. Don't judge me, love me. I'm saying that over and over again because sometimes I'm even trying to convince myself. Every now and again, I find myself reliving some of that behavior so that I can feel the pain of my mother telling me when I was 4 months pregnant, I tried to abort you. You know, I remember the first time my mother told me that I was 9 years old. She said, do you know when I was 4 months, I stuck a hanger inside of me trying to abort you? I wish you hadn't have been born. You know, and what happened with me hearing that from my mother is I started skin popping at 9. By 12 years old, I was mainlining. And then I found out after I did my 8th step that all behavior has meaning. And when my mother died 3 years ago, I realized my mother was the result of a rape. And then I started letting my mother off the hook. What I realized then is some people just don't do no damn step work and they ass is crazy and it ain't got nothing to do with me. I realized I have to allow people to be in their crazy. But long as I'm not in it. See, that's when I realized how important, you know, being a servant is in the 12th step. That when you a servant, you got to put up with some stuff that make you want to slap somebody, but you can't. You ever wanted to taste something but your sugar up, and you just want to dip your finger in it and then lick your lips after you done dipped your finger in it? You ever wanted to? I had an experience recently where I was at in service. It was the East of the River subcommittee. We was putting on a marathon. And a sister walked up to me that I don't even really know. I see her, but I don't really know her. And she said, you know what? I want to stab you. And I said, wow. I say, now two things can happen. I can reactivate my DC number. But I know they got them little juices over there. So, you know, and the young girls will be calling me Ma. Or I can go outside and call the police and tell them that somebody threatened me. You know, do y'all know what it took for me to do the second one?
Yeah.
It took everything in my power because the old Sharon, the one that likes being judged. I used to love being judged. I loved it when I walked in here with my rent money on my back. I loved it when I came to all the convention with my damn light bill money. And then I would go home and the damn lights would be cut off and I got to sit there with my man by candlelight and call that romantic. When really ain't no lights in the house. See, that doesn't make any sense, y'all. It may be funny now, but that's the stuff that I used to do. Because I needed you all not to judge me by not having the latest Coach bag. And then somebody turned me on to New York and I realized y'all didn't know a real Coach from a fake one. But see, that's the level of consciousness. It may be very simple. It may be very simple, but that's a level of consciousness. When we start to being able to differentiate between liking to be judged or needing somebody's approval or having a level of self-obsession, self-acceptance, or knowing what the triangle of self-obsession is all about, or realizing that when we get to our fourth step, that there's about 327 questions that is mandatory that you answer. Because if you don't answer them, you're going to be walking around here, and then you're going to walk up to somebody and say, I want to stab you. And that person going to look at you and say, wow. But I remember when that was me. Now, I got a few minutes, because they said it's something about people can share from the floor. And if we have time, and I want to make sure that we do. Because a lot of what I'm talking about, folks, you already know. Some people in this room that's here, they know me. They know how important it is for me to just be a good person today. You know, I've come a long way from where I used to be. I used to be off the chain. But when I realized that my substance abuse was an attempt to self-soothe from the molestation, when I realized that even though I was killing myself, it made sense to me to shoot dope in my neck so I wouldn't think about my mother's brother on top of me. All that stuff used to make sense to me. You know, but then I said, wait a minute. If I'm 5 years old and a 45-year-old man is putting me on his lap, he must be sick. That's what helped me start letting people off the hook. That the girls who I met when I got here that I wanted so much to be my friend who was still stealing Barbie dolls. You know how we get here and we get cute, get a few 24 hours and we borrowing bags that we're no intention on returning. You're stealing a Barbie doll. Okay? I used to be like that. I used to do that. You know, I would get involved with women of my first couple of sponsors before I got Fast Eddie, God rest his soul. I got them because they had the latest gear. And I said, I know I can fit that shoe. I'm going over there and ask her to be my sponsor so I can borrow her shit. You know, because my mind was reprobate. I was encouraged and I was inspired to not use, but my mind had not been transformed. So you have to have a psychic change in here, folks. You can walk around here and think that not using is going to get it. And I've seen people jump off bridges with 27 years, put guns in their mouth, all kind of stuff. I don't want that to be me. Because like Joan says, we'll come to your funeral. We'll make some macaroni and cheese and grains and yams, and then we'll go back to doing service work and working on ourselves. So my hope for myself as I continue to, as for God to use me, is that I'm able to come around to conferences. This is what I do for a living. You know, it's even funny that I travel all over the world sharing my story, because in fact, that's what I do. I go all around. They call it trauma-informed care. I call it trauma, and I shot dope, and I'm an addict and stuff like that, you know. But for real, I get an opportunity to just talk about, you know, not what's wrong with me, but what happened to me. See, that's the question. It's not what's wrong. It's what happened. That's what my fourth step helped me realize. I'm grateful that when my sponsor, Terry, asked me, would you come and share, and she told me about all the different topics. When I thought about don't judge me, love me, at first, like my sister said, it was a little bit of fear, because I know people gonna judge you anyway because they not working on shit. You know, they just be needing something to do, and I be saying, why don't you sell some t-shirts with my face on it instead of hating on me? Because you know, haters are secret admirers or people in the closet. They just don't know it. They haven't come to that level of consciousness yet that they really love you. You know, I was taught early on that if you want what people got, you got to do what they do. But see, I didn't always know what that meant. Because the things that I wanted when I first got in here were, I want to sleep with somebody's husband. You know, I want to have somebody paying all my bills so that I don't have to work. I can take my money and do what I want to do with it and take his money and do what I need to do with it. See, I had those kind of goals and I hit them with amazing accuracy. But now I have a different set of goals. I have a whole different set of goals. And the goals that I have now don't have nothing to do with causing no harm to nobody. The goals I have now is going to Greece or sitting in a meeting in China, you know, or going to Italy, hearing a meeting in Italian, or, you know, going to Africa and hearing a meeting in Swahili, you know, or going to, I just got back from Las Vegas this morning, you know, going to Las Vegas and not going there to gamble, but just going there to catch a meeting with my homies that I met at the last conference. And let me say this about being in service. The first time I ever went to England was because I was on the line, on the service line, and I was talking to some people who didn't know where they was from, and they said, well, we're coming to, you know, we're coming to Washington, D.C. We want to catch the meeting, and we don't know if you could take us there, but we so appreciate it, you know. And I was like, yeah, yeah, if you come to town, look me up, I'm going to be over at the XYZ Club. You know, and the people came to town, and I was at the XYZ Club, and I took them around to some different meetings. And they say, well, guess what? My wife has some frequent flyer miles. Would you like to come to England and go to some meetings with us? And I was like, hell yeah, you know. Of course, you know. And that was the first time I ever flown international. Being in service. Came back with all of my, I've been to England. I had a British breakfast t-shirt on. And you know people was judging me and hating on me. I said, all you had to do is get in service. This ain't nothing but fruit of my labor. You know? This ain't nothing but the rewards of what God tells us he gonna give us anyway when we stop doing what we were doing and just help somebody with no strings attached. I don't have nothing you can't have. So when I walk around and I do what I do and I go where I go and I come back or I'm all on Facebook by the damn Eiffel Tower, I don't want nobody saying shit to me but how you get there. Or how do I apply for my passport? Or, you know, when I get there, where should I stay, at the Park Royal or Hyde Park? You know what I'm saying? That's all I want you asking me. But even if you don't, guess what? I'm going to love you. I'm going to teach you something. And a lot of times, I don't want to teach you nothing. But I realized that the position that God put me in order for me to stay there, I got to do it. Yeah. See, that's where that, when you get a splinter in your ass and you try to get it out yourself, it's impossible. You need help. What you going to do, look in the mirror with some tweezers? But you know, we do that. We do that. Y'all is laughing this shit, man. But you know we do that. But that's what, when we judge each other, gets us. You never know who kidney you might need. And I sit looking around the room, see two or three people that's got a kidney from somebody I know. You never know who might ride past you in a rainstorm because you judging them. Judging, it hurts, folks. We have to stop hurting one another. So I got about 2 minutes left. And I just want to just really... just thank you all for just allowing me to serve y'all just for this little 33 minutes or some or the other. You know, I don't know if anybody will get the tape. Somebody will probably judge me about that shit too. And don't get, I ain't getting out the tape. Had that big ass afro puff with a flower in it. Ain't no sun. I don't know. I'm just saying. Thanks for letting me share.
about 10 minutes.
What is it? What I ask for?
I'm going downstairs.